Hey guys, coming up today on Sports Spectrum, Brian Tome. He is the pastor of Crossroads Church in Cincinnati. In 2017, it was the fastest growing church in America. It's one of the largest churches in the country. Brian has been leading men for over two decades. He hosts the Aggressive Life podcast. He started this thing called Man Camp, which is a primitive weekend camping experience. 20,000 men have been a part of Man Camp to reclaim the core of manhood. He's the author of five books, including The Five Marks of a Man, that we're going to talk about here today on the show. Brian's a big sports fan. Cincinnati sports are doing better, we'll just say, especially the Bengals and Joe Burrow leading the way. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about pastoring and leading in the vein of being a quarterback and a coach, and certainly Jesus as the ultimate leader for all of us. I think you're going to love this conversation, especially men out there, with Brian Tome. It's coming up in just a second here on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to tell you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. We've talked about it. It's getting close to that holiday season. And if you're thinking about, what should I get this person in my life that loves Jesus and loves sports? Well, how about the Sports Spectrum magazine? You can subscribe right now at sportspectrum.com. That's where all of our content can be found, but particularly the magazine, which is the only thing that we charge for. You can subscribe, and it's the best thing that we do. It's a quarterly magazine, four issues, and it's very affordable. We want to even give you an opportunity to have it be even more affordable by giving you 15% off. You subscribe to a one-year subscription to Sports Spectrum magazine over at sportspectrum.com. You can get 15% off by putting in the code podcast15 when you check out. Podcast15 when you check out, and save 15% off the Sports Spectrum magazine. You can subscribe today, right now, perfect in time for the holidays. It's clean content, family friendly. Do it right now over at sportspectrum.com. Great to welcome back Brian Tome to Sports Spectrum. He's the pastor at Crossroads Church in Cincinnati, and he's got these new books out, The Five Marks of a Man, Finding Your Path to Courageous Manhood, and The Tactical Guide that goes with it, which makes perfect gifts as we get near the holiday season here. Hi, Brian. Welcome back to Sports Spectrum, buddy.
Jason, it's great to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's good to see you. Good to talk to you. You know, I've been doing this recently with how to start conversations, and I like starting it with Jesus, which I think we probably should always start everything we do with him. You've been pastoring a long time. Let me ask it this way. Who is Jesus to Brian Tome in this stage of life today? What would you say?
I think what he is my leader. I think that's what I most connect with, my leader. And he's obviously always my king. When I think of king, though, I think more of I'm just in submission underneath him, which is true. I am.
Right.
But I'm finding life is in many ways more complex than it's ever been. And I've got to see where he's going, where he's gone historically, and where he wants to go right now, and just fall in behind him. So I'm identifying him as leader.
What would you say when you're saying complex more than it's ever been? Can you kind of go a little bit more into that?
Well, yeah. So, you know, my day job as a pastor.
That alone is complex, right?
it is, but it wasn't too complex, you know, 27 years ago when I started. It was pretty simple. It was like start a church, get a core group.
Right.
And then it wasn't too complex when we were in a building boom. They're hard. They're difficult doing building booms, raising money, but it's pretty clear, like, we got to do that. Well, now I'm in a phase of life where I just don't want more of the same. I don't want just incremental growth in the organization I lead. I want to see if maybe I might be a part of an awakening where the Spirit of God comes across a region, scales fall off of eyes. And that's a different leadership. I know how to manage an organization. I know how to give a sermon. I know how to have a budget that passes and where the ends meet. But when you start talking about, okay, if I want something more than what I've had before, I'm going to have to do something different than I've done up to this point. And that's where I need the wisdom of Christ. And I've got to see things he did, which, by the way, he didn't build buildings. He didn't even gather the same people every single week. He didn't even have a brand new sermon every week. I mean, he said the same stuff again and again and again. In the Sermon on the Mount, there's a Sermon on the Mount and the Sermon on the Plain where he gives a bunch of the same material. So when I look at him, I'm not going to find tactical insights to how to do my normal day job, but I'm trying to look at how he managed his life and his relationships to maybe have something more and more, something more potent.
What's the greatest leadership trait that you find when you're talking about Jesus as leader that you've seen?
Jason, these are such great questions. Don't you ever prepare your guests beforehand and tell them all the great questions you're going to ask? I feel like I should be more well-informed on this. That's good stuff.
Brian, I was a producer for 20 years in local radio and national media, and yet I didn't produce well here. I should have given you a little heads up, man. My bad.
No, you're doing great, Jason. I still listen to you talk, and I still think, I want that voice. You have a voice for podcast and radio. It's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Anyway,
I appreciate
your question was, give it to me again because I got sidetracked.
I think the greatest leadership trait that you find is Jesus as leader in your life. What's the leadership trait that he demonstrates that you find that is just, that's it. That's the biggest one.
I think the one that I'm relating to and most challenged by the most is it seems like his voice was always used the most potent way possible. He seemed like he always had the right thing to do to mobilize a crowd, whether it's mobilizing a crowd, you know, or minister to a person one-on-one and say to the woman at the well, say, hey, where's everybody gone? Neither do I condemn you. Now go and sin no more. He just said like the perfect thing to her, right? Actually, that wasn't the woman at the well. That was the woman who was being stoned.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Caught in adultery.
But yeah, he had a very similar one with the woman who was at the well. He had his Sermon on the Mount was really a great way to mobilize the masses for his mission. If I look at it that way versus a list of a new morality, it looks really different. So I'm challenged by that. Like, am I just using my voice to teach doctrine that's biblically true? Well, I hope I'm doing that. That's good. But he didn't just teach people what was biblically true. He mobilized them and motivated them to go in the right direction as a team and as a community. And I find that's necessary for me right now.
Do you see yourself now as a pastor differently? I mean, I know we talked about sort of the evolution and the different ways of being a pastor today versus when you first started 27 years ago. But do you see yourself, I'm going to use a sports analogy here, as kind of a quarterback or more of a coach in the way that you pastor your congregation today versus when you were, you know, starting up here?
That's very insightful. I would say at the beginning of the church's history, I was the quarterback. We all know, at least in professional football, if you don't have a great quarterback, you're not going to go anywhere. Like, I'm sure we're going to talk about the Bengals at some point.
We are.
The Bengals are really the only difference with the Bengals. There is a new coach, but it's the same ownership that Cincinnati has been frustrated with forever and ever and ever. Really, the only difference is Joe Burrow, you know? And I think we all now know, given where the Patriots went, what's happened to them, we always thought it was magic between Belichick and Tom Brady. And I always said, no, it's not Belichick and Tom Brady. Where Belichick coached before, they were always losers. Yep. Whether it was the Browns or whatever it was, it's Tom Brady. And, of course, they separate. And, of course, Belichick has done nothing. It's like the worst season the Patriots have had forever. And Tom Brady had two more years, got the Super Bowl, won, and then another one where he got pretty far. So it's the quarterback. So in the early days of the ministry, I was the quarterback. Like, the ball was in my hands. I had the largest amounts of responsibility. If I didn't preach well that week, I mean, the team wasn't going to go anywhere. Now where we are is I am more of a coach. We've got other communicators that are here. I've got other gift sets and abilities that I can deploy in terms of where we allocate our energies. I'm more of a cheerleader for people. I've been telling our folks, I said, look, if I could figure out a way to lead Crossroads only preaching once a month, I would do that. Mm. I'm about twice a month now. I could do more, but I want to manage and coach other people so that the church can have different voices who are better than me in areas. So, no, I relate more to the coach or general manager role right now, who still does throw the ball.
He does, yeah. And the quarterback gets in the game, you know, and does his thing like you were doing a little bit more. But the coach is, I mean, I love the analogies or comparisons of that in ministry to the sports world, because everybody's got their role. I mean, especially with a church of your size now, it's got to feel more like a giant sports franchise, right? Where you have everybody coming in and making sure that they contribute in their aspects. And then, you know, the offensive line has to do their job and everybody's got to be in the right spots and all the assistant coaches and even the trainers and everybody. Like, that's very similar, I would imagine, to your, you know, role with Crossroads.
It's very similar, and the quarterback role is still appropriate. One of the more interesting podcasts I've listened to in the last couple of years was Tom Brady's podcast when he had on Roger Staubach and Steve Young. Have you heard about that podcast or that episode?
I haven't. Staubach was one of my early, like 5 year old Jason's, you know, favorite players. So I need to go listen to this, but I haven't heard it. No.
So here's what I got. It was fascinating. I listened to it in the midst of all the COVID garbage that, if you're a leader in a church, in a business, whatever, it was just the worst of times for everybody, right? It was just tough.
Yep.
Politically, scientifically, medically. I mean, it was just rough. And if I had more financial wherewithal, I might have just thrown in the towel and said, forget it, I can't take this.
Hmm.
And I listened to this podcast, these three folks. Steve Young was Tom Brady's hero before he got in the NFL. Roger Staubach was Steve Young's hero before he got into the NFL.
Wow.
And Staubach and Young both said, looking at Tom Brady, who at that point was still playing, they said, looking at what you're doing, it really makes us wish we could go back and rewrite the end of our career. We probably pulled the plug too quickly. One of them said, when you retire, it's just like you're in the middle of a desert canyon. You don't know where you're going to go. And what they said, I think it was Roger Staubach who said, for an NFL quarterback, the two things that determine whether or not you can still play, I'm curious, see what you think. What do you think the two things that determine whether or not an NFL quarterback can still play?
I would say your ability to still execute plays the same way you always used to, but also your health. And both those guys, Young and Staubach, I don't know if this is where you're going, but they both retired because they had concussions. They were both at the top of their game the year before, but multiple head injuries and injuries derailed their careers probably earlier than they would have liked. But what was the answer?
Yeah, you're right. When I listened to their answers, I thought, you guys didn't really mention the concussion thing. It's interesting that they didn't mention the concussion thing. So maybe it's just selective memory, or maybe they had so many concussions they don't have a memory of how bad it was.
That's possible.
But they said their two things were, number one, arm strength.
Yes.
Okay. There comes a point when you lose arm strength. And then the second one shocked me. They said emotional recovery.
Wow.
They said, I just couldn't recover emotionally anymore from game to game. And I listened to that. Wow. And I thought, wow, those are really important. I thought, so for me, I think, one, it would be ability to preach. That's the equivalent of arm strength. And then number two is the same exact thing, emotional recovery. Like, I was just not recovering during COVID. It was, you're just hanging on. And now I realize that's so important. And I've got to stop feeling bad about preaching only twice a month, or stop feeling bad about the number of hunting trips I'm taking, or I used to go on Monday mornings. I'd preach on the weekend, and I'd have a 6:30 a.m. meeting on Monday with my men's group. I could do that when I was 30. I could do it when I was 35. I could do it when I was 40. I can't do that now at 58, Jason. I need to be at home and like doing nothingness until 11 o'clock, and then I roll on Mondays, because I'm noticing it takes different tools to emotionally recover than it used to.
And different stages of life allow you to see that. And that's what we're going to talk about a lot, too, in terms of manhood in your new books. I think there's different stages of manhood and different stages of life that we react differently to and how we look at things like that. I do want to ask you about Burrow for a second before we move into talking about your books, because 3 years ago when we had you on this show, 3.5 years ago, there was no Joe Burrow yet on the Bengals, or if he was on the team, I think that might have been the knee injury year, and we all thought, okay, this isn't going to work out so well for the Bengals, and yet you go to a Super Bowl, you go to an AFC Championship game back-to-back years. It's got to be pretty nice in Cincinnati now with football compared to what it was the last time we talked to you.
Cincinnati is sort of just now coming out of their trauma. You know, you got to recognize I grew up in Pittsburgh. I knew some of the Pittsburgh Steelers players. I knew some of the coaches. I would do some school assemblies with some of the players. I did a school assembly way back with Tony Dungy.
Sure.
When he was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And in Pittsburgh, every game you were going to win it. You just believed it. Every year was going to be a Super Bowl year. And the whole city shut down for games, and the whole city lived and died together. And there's just this sucking together of the whole city. In Cincinnati, that's not the way it's been. There's just been a growing cynicism about Cincinnati. So when, understandably so, right, didn't win a playoff game for 20-some years. So when Burrow goes down the very first year with the knee injury, Cincinnati's just saying, oh, gosh, it's just like Keanu Carter, number one draft pick, blew out his knee on, I think it was a kickoff return, the very first play. And there's just got to be some curse on the Bengals. And all of Cincinnati just, oh, gosh, this is awful. And then, of course, Burrow comes back the next season and just has been amazing. And now Cincinnati, we actually believe. Our first playoff win, people in Cincinnati were saying, oh, my gosh, isn't it great winning playoff games? And I would say to them, I said, you realize this is the way it is in Pittsburgh every year.
Right. Yes.
every year,
yes.
Every playoffs at that point. But now Cincinnati believes that we're winners. And Joe Burrow said the perfect line last year that embodies Cincinnatians' fears and the kind of leader Joe Burrow is. Someone said to him, you know, you lost the Super Bowl last year. You got the AFC championship game and you lost. What about your championship window? Is it closing? How long can it stay open? And Burrow said, the championship window is open in Cincinnati so long as I'm here.
Great answer. Great answer.
That was like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
That was like amazing. So now this year, you know, Burrow has had a relatively slow start with the calf strain and some things like that. But Cincinnatians, part of us are going, oh no, it's happening again. It's getting yanked out of our hands. But there's enough momentum now that Cincinnatians are still very pro Bengals and pretty optimistic. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you cannot close the window. I mean, they started slow in 2022 and got to the AFC Championship game. You know, so
yes,
as long as you have that guy under center, I think they have a shot in every game. And there's a reason why he was playing through that calf injury, because without Joe Burrow, even at 50%, it was going to be a lot worse. So let's at least have a shot here. And yeah, I think Cincinnati will be, as we record this, I think we can look ahead to when people might be listening to this, or even further when we get to like Christmas time. I think the Bengals will be right there as a team to look out for.
Well, it's not just Burrow either. Burrow is certainly the leader emotionally, if not physically. You know, he's definitely the leader, but the team is loaded with other winning attitudes. Like a friend of mine, their kicker, Evan McPherson, Money Mac.
Yeah.
He's a part of our church. Just a great, great dude.
He's a stud.
One of my favorite stories about him, and I verify, like, is this true? I can't remember if it was the AFC Championship game before they went to the Super Bowl, or the divisional playoff before they went to the AFC Championship game. I can't remember which of those one it is, but
he won them both. He kicked game-winning field goals in both those
games.
He
did win them both, and it was game-winning field goals.
Yes.
And here's this rookie. He gets off the bench, and he tells everybody who's in earshot, he says, looks like we're going to the Super Bowl, boys.
Yes.
He goes out on the field. He kicks the ball. So there's a bunch of dudes on the team that have got confidence and swagger. Not pride and ego, but just confidence and swagger that you just have not seen that with the Bengals, at least since I've lived in Cincinnati for 27 years.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see. Brian Tome is in Cincinnati. He's the pastor of Crossroads Church, and he joins us here on Sports Spectrum. He's also an author of, I believe this is 5 books now, Brian, right? And the 5 Marks of a Man and the 5 Marks of a Man Tactical Guide, which are out now and released. Great gifts if you're thinking about it for the holiday season and what to get that Jesus-loving guy in your life. But let's talk about these books. This feels like a book, or books, if you will, a series that is needed now more than ever.
Yeah, the story of the book was, I noticed that men were hurting years ago, and I noticed also that churches were doing a much better job reaching women than men. It's probably 70% attendance in the average church is female, and and the rest is male. And I think that's actually an optimistic statistic, but that's what I've heard. And so I'd noticed that men were hurting. My son was born. They took him and they put him on the changing table. And I'm adopted, so I don't, at that point, he's my second child. He's only the second person in my life I'd ever seen who shared my DNA. It's kind of a freaky thing, right? So I went over to the changing table. I held his little hand. As soon as I held his hand, he shot a stream of urine up in the air. It hit my arm and dribbled all the way down my wrist. And I thought to myself, I said, self, this could be an omen. And if you don't get a hold of this little guy, he's going to, I'll say, the P word instead of the other P word. I'm not sure what your standards are here, but he's going to pee all over me.
Yes.
Just like I peed all over my dad. My dad didn't have a car I didn't wreck. He didn't have a rule I didn't break. He didn't have a curfew that I didn't violate. He didn't have money around the house I didn't steal for a card game. I was atrocious. And I realized I've got to do something different for my son. Because when you have a son, Jason, it's sons and daughters are both awesome. Obviously, they're both children of God, and quite frankly, the older I get in my life, the more I appreciate my daughters, because your daughters never leave you. Your son goes off to another family, and that's just kind of the way it works, but your daughters are always around, right? So daughters are amazing.
Yes.
But when you have a son, you have a weapon that could hurt people. Men hurt people more than women do. A man can say, or your dad can say the same thing to you that your mom says to you, but it hurts you more than that your dad says it. Mm. We have a whole movement, hashtag Me Too, because many men are out of control and hurting women. Yeah. When you have a boy, it's like having a Rottweiler or a German Shepherd, good dog, but if you don't train it right, it's not like having a Chihuahua. Someone's going to get hurt, right?
Yes.
So I did a series on manhood. It was really received well. I did a self-published book on it, and then a publisher came along and said, hey, can we publish this book? And I said, sure, we did that. And then we did the most recent one, which is an updated version, to just help men, because they're struggling, Jason. Men are 4 times more likely to commit suicide than women. Mm. Men are 2 times more likely to have an alcohol abuse-related incident than women. Men are struggling in a huge way, and women are too, but we have to expand our compassion bucket. And I think men, for whatever reason, aren't the recipients of our compassion. As so much has changed in culture, and quite frankly, men are getting left in the dust, and we can get into that if you want. But that's my heart for men, and that's why the books are here. And that's also, I think, why they've been flying off the shelves, because there's very few voices to reach men where they are and to give them help.
Yeah,
and I try to be one of those.
There's a need, because I'm one of the elders on the leadership board at our church here in Connecticut, and I've just seen getting men to get out of whatever rut they're in or whatever comfort zone or whatever in to go below the surface, we'll just say, is so difficult, Brian.
It is
so hard to, like, not just talk about sports and the weather and your jobs. Like, let's find out how you're doing, and let's find out how you're really doing. A book like this, I feel like, allows us to kind of find out how we're really doing.
Yeah, The 5 Marks for Man is a great primer for you, and the field guide, or the tactical guide rather, is a great thing for you to discuss with other guys.
Yes.
And this goes, Jason, to the struggles we have in churches. Our churches are wired to reach women. They're not wired to reach men.
Mm.
As an example, the average church, if they have a small group system, it consists of everyone sign up for this, and here's the book you go through. Well, that works for women. Women just like to talk with each other, and they do a much better job at it. But for the average guy, you say, come to a house, sit in a circle, put a book on your lap, and talk. They're like, no.
Yeah.
No, that's just not something the average guy. Now, I do. I'm fine with that, but
same
I'm
here. Yeah.
A little unusual of a male, right?
Yeah.
Men, we tend to bond when we're doing something together. And churches don't know how to get men to do something together unless it's a pancake breakfast, which no man really wants to go to, right? We don't know how to deploy them. And when men are doing something together, like a hobby or something like that, then they develop friendships, and then they can start going beneath the veneer. But few guys have got genuine friendships that enable them to talk beneath the veneer. And so, yeah, that's why men are struggling. We're not opening up our lives to one another. We're very, very isolated.
Yeah, in your book, in chapter 15, I'm just going to read the title and let you kind of expand a little bit. I don't want to give away too much, because we want people to get it. But I think this kind of plays into the sports world. In chapter 15, it says, boys live to play, men play to live. Can you kind of, there's a lot of sports connections just in that chapter if people who are listening are sports fans and want to kind of understand the connection here. But yep. Can you expand on that a little bit? I thought it was very relatable to our audience just listening here.
So that's in the basic overall mark. There's five marks, and that's a subset of one of the marks, which is that men work, boys play. Yes. Boys will get up every day, and they just want to play. They want to have a nice day. A man gets up, and he says, how can I add value? How can I sweat today? And that title right there, that little chapter, embraces that we as men, we do need to play, but play is not the ultimate purpose and goal of our life. Play restores us. It refuels us. And when a man hasn't learned healthy ways to play, he's not taking revenge on his work, letting off steam, and he's probably going to get into some problems. I have a kind of a fixation that some would call unhealthy, Jason, but I call it a means of survival. When I know that a pastor has fallen, and there's a lot of pastors who've fallen who've been DQ'd,
yeah,
I know enough people, and I run in circles where I can find out why that guy lost the plot, what took place.
Yeah.
And I found that there are two things, always, there's always two things that happen in a guy's life when he falls. You want to guess what those two things are? And I'm not talking about like the adulterous affair or the embezzling. Like, what is behind the veneer? What leads to that, or what isn't happening?
One comes to mind, like living in secrecy or hiding, not having people around you, accountability and to do life with. Because often if we don't have people, we just kind of hide our emotions, hide our struggles, our sin. Am I anywhere?
Boom. Yes.
On the right track.
Yes, that's exactly one of them. I put it as they don't have deep friendships inside the church.
Yeah.
Inside.
Yes, right.
People who hear you preach, people who are around you. Your best friends cannot be the people you went to seminary with, the people you were in college with. That's fine to have them, but they got to be in your church. They can see you, which again is one of the reasons why so many of these churches that fall, they've got these boards that are external advisors, you know, star pastors from other churches that are part of their board. They don't know what's going on inside your church.
Right.
They're not hearing you preaching. They're not looking in your eyes as they pass you in the atrium and seeing if nobody's home and if you're empty. It's friendships who are in the church. That's definitely one of them. You know what the other one is?
Hmm.
All these folks, not only do they not have friends, deep abiding friends where accountability and all that stuff can come from, not only do they have not have deep abiding friends at the church, but they also don't have a life-giving hobby.
Wow.
And I'm sorry, working out doesn't count as a hobby. No. Working out is fine. Working out is good.
Yeah.
But a hobby is something that you spend money on. A hobby is something you can research and really geek out on. A hobby is something when you do it, you're going to meet other guys who do that hobby, and you're going to have a likelihood of building friendships. My great friendships have come out of my hobbies. Guys I've rode motorcycles with, guys I'm hunting with, made two new friends recently, and they're guys who are helping me, and they have knowledge on how to restore a 1978 Jeep CJ7. I've never welded before. I'm learning how, and these other people are helping me.
Wow.
A lot of guys do not have those things. They feel guilty that they have a hobby. But if you don't have one, man, it is danger. I tell women, I said, look, do whatever you can to fight for your husband for these two things. Encourage him to be able to find a hobby, and it's going to cost money. There's no hobby that's cheap, unless it's maybe finger painting, which that's a good hobby. Finger painting does for you.
Sure,
great.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be some stereotypical manly hobby. Just something that you lose yourself in. Something that when you do it, you don't think about ministry or anything else. Hobby, and give him freedom to spend evenings or whenever with friends. It'll bless your marriage and help your ministry.
That's beautiful to hear. My wife is wonderful at that, letting me have those guy trips with my couple buddies from church. I'm going on one in a couple weeks to Auburn, Alabama to spend a weekend. We're just going to go watch some college football and hang out and eat some good food and just be guys together.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's wonderful. And I cherish those because I also love my time with my wife and love serving in my church and doing this job and talking to people like you. But those times to get away are just refreshment for the soul. It really is.
Yeah, and you come back better. And your wife, if she's got her spiritual wits about her, she feels safer because she's saying, oh, Jason's with people who are rooted. And there's probably something's going to come up or could come up that's actually going to help me because he's going to be more solid. Yeah. It's when a woman has a man who's a lone wolf, she doesn't feel safe. Even that language, right? Men talk about that. Well, I'm more of a lone wolf. I hear guys say, well, I'm more of a lone wolf. We talk about this in the book.
Yeah.
And when a guy says, well, I'm more of a lone wolf, I say, you mean you're weak and you're going to die early?
Oof.
Because that's what lone wolves are. I went to see an expert on wolves and got to visit one or some out in Wyoming a number of years ago. And lone wolves are not in a pack. And therefore, they don't eat well because they need a pack to pull down an elk. So they're smaller than other wolves. They're weaker than other wolves. And they die sooner than other wolves. This is what's happening with the modern American male. We're actually exalting the idea of a lone wolf. I don't need anybody. I'm a self-made man. I'm pulling myself up by my bootstraps. And in exalting that, we're just pointing a finger at our unhealth and how life is not going well and is not going to go well for us.
Man, that's good stuff. Again, the book's called The Five Marks of a Man. There is a new tactical guide to go along with the reissue of the book. Brian Tome is our guest here on Sports Spectrum. My last question for you, and this may be selfish in asking this question, but that's okay. We're working through this here. I just turned 50 years old, and I was thinking about this, not just for me, but for other people. You're 58, I'm 50. For guys that are maybe a little bit later in life, I have a college-age daughter, you know, is it too late for us, those guys in their 50s and their even 60s or 70s, to start to implement these principles of being a better leader, being a better man from your book? Is it too late, or is this really only for the 20s and 30-year-olds that we're trying to get to save them before they get to our age?
It is definitely not too late, and it regularly happens that when I speak on these marks, which has been just a lot of different audiences, a lot of different places.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens is the older guys feel guilt and shame. Like, man, if I'd have heard this 30 years ago, if I'd have done this before, and I'm really quick to tell them, said, hey, if you have regrets, say, over how you were a dad and you didn't bless your kids. You know, Jesus, Jason, hears from God three times, just three times, recorded in the Bible. He might have heard from God other times, but it's only three times in the Bible it's recorded that he hears from God. None of those situations does God tell him what to do. He doesn't say, now go over to Capernaum and preach. Now here's what I want your outline to be for the Sermon on the Mount. None of them he gives them tactical stuff. Two of them he says the exact same thing. This is my son in whom I'm well pleased. He says that to him at his baptism, and he says that to him at the Transfiguration when he has Peter, James, and John.
Yes.
That are there. And so what I tell older men who may be at man camp with their 25-year-old son, who's even there, I tell man camp, by the way, is we've had like 14,000 guys go through an experience for men. We do it every year. Our one this year has got 2,700 guys are showing up in a week or so.
Incredible.
From all over the country. And I'll tell them, look, hey, guys, your son wants to hear from you that you're proud of him. Until a father figure tells a young male that he's a man and he's proud of him, that young male is going to try to prove that he's a man, and most of the time it's going to be unhealthy. So just tell your son that you're proud of your son. We never stop wanting to hear that. No child of a father, when they're 20, 25, 30, 40, we all want to be well-led. Now, how we're led at 40 is going to be a lot different than how we were led at 4 and 14.
Sure.
But we all want dad to be on point. We want to see that he's growing. And when he takes interest in us and he has the right word for us, it is gold.
That's gold, what you just said there. I think it's a good reminder, and it's a great place to leave our conversation, Brian Tome. Thank you for coming back on the show. Congratulations on the new books, The Five Marks of a Man and The Tactical Guide, Five Marks of a Man Tactical Guide, which are out now. And go Bengals, I hope. And by the way, the Reds didn't have a bad year this year. I mean, they didn't make it.
No.
But they were competitive, so it was like, all right, can we get the Reds and the Bengals?
Amazing.
Yeah?
You know, Cincinnati, we've had little redheaded stepchild syndrome for the last, you know, decades. Like, we lose, we lose, 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 lose. And you're right, this, what an amazing year.
Yeah.
Reds right into the end. Yeah. Bengals have got on our new path. FC Cincinnati, those of us who are becoming soccer fans.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, like best record in the MLS this year. It's great days to be a Cincinnatian.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great day to have Brian Tome back on Sports Spectrum. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Jason.
And many thanks to Brian Tome for being here on Sports Spectrum. The new books, The Five Marks of a Man and The Five Marks of a Man Tactical Guide, are out now. You can get them everywhere books are found. If you're a part of a men's group, maybe you listen to this podcast as part of a men's group, I'm telling you, get The Five Marks of a Man and go through that with your men's group, with your team, especially for the guys learning to become better men, godly men, better husbands, better fathers, and better leaders. The Five Marks of a Man is out now. You can get your copy everywhere books are found. And again, thanks to Brian Tome for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum. Thank you as well for joining us, for tuning in to this episode of the Sports Spectrum podcast. If you can do us a favor and click that subscribe button, that like button, so that you don't miss any more episodes of Sports Spectrum's podcast. Maybe tell someone about Sports Spectrum as a brand, the fact that we exist. Keeping Jesus in the sports conversation as a media ministry with podcasts and articles and devotionals and all sorts of content, our magazine that I talked about at the top of the podcast. Again, tell someone about Sports Spectrum. That's the best way that you can be an ambassador for our ministry. And ultimately, what we all want to do is be great ambassadors for Jesus, as He is the way, He is the truth, and He is the life. No one can come to the Father except through Him. That's our ministry. That's what it's founded on. That's what it's about. We want to see Jesus lifted high and glorified through the work that we're doing with Sports Spectrum. Thanks for tuning in. We love you guys. We'll see you next time with another episode here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Have a great rest of your day.